So welcome to this January retreat 2015. Welcome everybody. And some of you have been on these retreats before, for some of you it's your first time. And the first thing I would say is no need to be afraid of what's happening here. The schedule, which you may have seen, is only just a guideline for you. The last thing which is needed on a retreat is for you to get stressed out, wanting to get up every morning at the right time and trying to struggle to keep all of the routines which are available for you. That's nothing to do with meditation when you stress out. So these are just guidelines for you. But it's most important that you are aware enough of your physical and mental state to make use of these facilities and this retreat as best you possibly can. In other words, you have nice rooms you can rest in and make sure the first few days you catch up on your sleep requirements, especially some of you who have come from overseas, you may still have some jet lag. And if you do have things like jet lag, you don't need to sort of follow the routine of Australia. You can meditate all night and sleep all day if you wish. In other words, I want you to be kind to your body, to be aware of your bodily needs and be kind to it. Because that combination of mindfulness and kindness is something which you'll make use of throughout the whole of this retreat. And if you get to understand that the mindfulness and the kindness are what propels you into very wonderful, enjoyable and profitable states of meditation, you'll understand its importance from even the very beginning. Now, you cannot control your body, you work with your body. You can't even control your mind. You actually work with your mind. And little by little, you learn how to let this body relax and let this mind become nice and still. And when the mind becomes still, it gets very bright, energized, happy, and it gets full of insight. And you can experience how this all works on this retreat. But I know that sometimes people come on a retreat and they just work too hard at the very beginning. They strive too much, they just get tense. And many stories I can tell, and one of the stories I always tell on the first night of a retreat, is the story of when I gave a retreat in Sydney many years ago. There was an executive came very late. In fact, she came so late that everything had just about closed up, but she managed to find out her dormitory and just asleep. And when she heard the first talk in the morning about like working with your body, being kind to yourself, she spent the first 3 days sleeping. So she would get up for breakfast, just before breakfast she'd get up, and after breakfast she'd go back to her room and sleep again. And she'd get up just before lunch, and after lunch have another nap. So she spent the first 2 or 3 days just sleeping most of the time. And she said because that retreat center was much more basic than this one, you had to stay in a dormitory, said the 3 or 4 women who shared her dormitory were so angry at her for not sort of getting up early and doing what everyone else was doing. And first of all, I told her, that's not anger, that's jealousy. They wish they had the guts to do what you're doing and have a sleep in. And I encouraged her in the interviews to work with her body. She was one of these, hard-working women, never having much time for herself. She was sleep-deprived and she needed to get back into a fit state of body. So she slept most of the first 3 days, and so by the third day, the fourth day, she hadn't done much meditation at all. But because she was kind to her body and rested the first 3 days, she soon caught up with all the others in the next 3 days. So after 6 days, she was basically at the average level which everyone else was at. But then the last 3 days, she really excelled, because her meditation really took off on the last 3 days. Because while everyone else was still struggling with their body, she looked after her body, cared for it, which meant that her body was not causing her any problems, and she could sit for long periods, she had energy, she didn't have tiredness, because she'd worked through that at the beginning, which meant that she became one of the star meditators on that retreat. And I praise her for her wisdom. Now, she was aware enough of her body that she knew it needed to rest, it needed to sleep. And because of that awareness, she was kind enough to let her body sleep, to follow what her body was telling her. Which meant that when she worked with her body in the first few days, the last few days her body was very happy to work with her. And she had energy, physical comfort, and she could meditate very deeply. And I think you will know that one of the biggest hindrances in a meditation retreat like this is tiredness. And the greatest remedy for tiredness is bed, sleep. That's what I have the beds there for. So the first few days, don't be a control freak. Don't be someone who says, I am going to fight through my tiredness. I am going to beat it. I am stronger than my body. Because your body will win. The body always wins. In the end, the body will always conquer us. It will die. So in order to put off that death as long as possible, please work with the body. Be kind to it. And then you'll find your body is kind to you. That's the first piece of advice there. And the second piece of advice is on the same principle. During, you know, the next 9 days, you'll have all this time, and you can make use of it, you know, as you need. You don't have to follow other people. So a lot of times you ask your body, body, how do you feel? Do you want to come into the hall and meditate? Or you can meditate in your room if you wish to. Or meditate sort of outside, maybe on the stupa, on the little platform there. There's so many places you can find to sit, especially in the early morning or the late evening. It's wonderful to sit outside. It's a nice cool weather and there's not that many bugs around, and it's wonderful to sit out there in the evening time and meditate outside. So you can meditate anywhere and for however long you need to meditate. So don't just get a clock and say, I've got to meditate for half an hour. Or an hour, or 3 hours, or whatever you think you should be meditating as long as. Try and let go of the prison of time during this retreat. So you sit down, if the meditation is still going well, carry on. But if there comes a time you feel you're mindful enough, the meditation, I'm not getting anywhere, I'm tired, I've had enough, then get up and do something else. So don't just follow the clock, because you'll find sometimes the body or the mind doesn't need to meditate anymore. At other times, the body and mind really, really want to carry on meditating. And it's because of that. I've been meditating for almost 45 years now, and I've taught retreats, been on retreats. And you know, sometimes it really sucks. You know, when you're really getting into a good meditation, somebody rings a damn gong, and you have to get out of your meditation. You could have been enlightened so earlier if, you know, you didn't have this gong, which kept on disturbing. Imagine if the Buddha had a gong under the Bodhi tree, and at 8 o'clock they gong the gong, and it would be terrible. We wouldn't have a Buddha. So what we're doing is we're just meditating as long as we feel it's useful. We're being aware and wise rather than following bells. And we used to do that 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, whenever it was, the gong went, everyone went to bed, and sometimes, you know, you weren't tired. And, you know, but I had to go to sleep because I had to get up at 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock in the morning. And so it was just totally unnatural. And sometimes, you know, when I was supposed to be meditating, I was sleepy. When I was supposed to be in bed, I was awake. And it never really worked. So instead, I learned how to work with my body. Sometimes in the evening, I had lots of energy. Just kept on meditating. 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock. If you got energy, carry on. You can always sleep in the morning. What time is breakfast for you? 6:45. So you can just, you know, you can meditate till 1 o'clock and just go to bed and get up at 6:45 if you want to. Or you can go to bed early and then just get up early. So you can actually work with your body and the rhythms of your body. And sometimes you don't really want to sleep very much. Sometimes you need to sleep more. And so when we don't make a strict schedule for ourselves, but we work with the body, we're mindful of its needs, and we're kind enough to follow those needs, you'll find that your body relaxes and your mind relaxes. You're not putting so much stress and pressure on you. because these retreats actually work. There are other retreats where it's almost like a discipline camp. I call it like Guantanamo Bay meditation camps, where you have to get up at a certain time. And if you don't get up at a certain time, you're dragged from your bed. And you have to stay up until a certain time. And that type of meditation, it makes you more tense. Yeah, you get something, a bit of self-discipline, but it's, you know, it's from the outside, it's not internal. And you miss out the peace and happiness of meditation. So that type of meditation I do not recommend at all. It wasn't part of the way I was trained. The way I was trained, you meditate at night however long you needed to. And you get up in the morning. Now if you needed to, if you needed to sleep in, you could sleep in. No one would criticize you except yourself. And that was just the Western guilt thing. But we learned how to have that freedom to work with our body. The meditation was hot and you're getting very peaceful. Everything was going well. You carried on. It didn't matter what time it was. So you're actually free of the prison of time. So don't worry too much about the clock. Instead, just be aware of your body. Be able to feel the body. And in order to do that, you know, sometimes this weather, sometimes it's hot, you know, but it's amazing, no matter how hot you feel if you've grown up in this country, there are some people who have come over from overseas and you find that you're really hot and they've got a blanket around them because they're cold. You know, sometimes Malaysians, Singapores, I can't believe it. Just, you know, they're cold and I'm sweating. But it's just where you're brought up. So sometimes it's nice to actually just feel hot. To feel cold. And even when you go back, you know, to not wear your shoes as you walk along the path. So you can actually feel, you know, the bamboo floor here. You can feel the concrete path. Or even if you go over the stones, you can feel the stones on your skin. Because you're getting aware of your physical body. And that's actually taking you away from all this thinking stuff. And when you are, going out in the afternoon, or early morning, it's sometimes quite windy in the early morning, or you get the sea breeze in the afternoon. Just, you know, take off any hats or scarves and feel the wind. So you're becoming more aware, mindful of your physical body. Because the mindfulness of the body brings your attention into the present moment and away from your head. Now, it's in the head with all the thoughts and the worries where you get all the problems. In fact, you know, yesterday I was invited to the Franklin Center in Greylands Hospital where they house the criminally insane. And, you know, they're asking for some advice on what to do, you know, when they get all these negative thoughts. And these are big time negative thoughts. And I just told her, just get your hand and just massage some part of your body. Start to feel the body. Be mindful of your body. And that will take your attention away from those really stupid, gross, crazy thoughts which are going on in your head. Now get into contact with the physical stuff rather than being too much in your head. And of course, you know, that's the only reason why those people are in this Institute for Mental Health in Western Australia is because they're extremely crazy. You're just moderately crazy. But, you know, it's only a matter of degrees. So to get into your body, being aware of the body, is a really good thing for the first few days. To feel the body, to understand, you know, what it's like, instead of always being thinking about stuff. And at the same time, that, you know, you're in nature here, it's a beautiful place, especially if you got used to the Western Australian forest. There are a lot of animals around. You can hear the sound of the birds in the morning and in the evening, the kangaroos out there destroying our lawn, which we spent a lot of money trying to fix up. But, you know, that's the animals. But when you go out into the forest or in the early morning, listen to the sound of the birds. Because when you're listening to the sound of the birds, it stops you thinking. Now just listen to the sound of the wind in the trees in the early morning. So don't try and block it out, but just learn to actually to embrace this sounds and feelings of nature. Because straight away, they start to stop the mind always being into this thinking, into its head, instead of actually experiencing life. There was this cartoon which I've been quoting recently, which was done by the Australian cartoonist Loonig. He's one of my favorite cartoonists. And it was a simple frame of a cartoon. In the left-hand side of the cartoon, there was a family watching the TV, and on the TV there was some nature channel, so it was a picture of a sunset on the TV. In the right-hand part of the cartoon, there was an open window where the sunset was actually happening. So, you know, the sunset's actually happening over there, and they're actually looking at it on the TV. It's a very good comment. How we're thinking about life in our head when actually life is actually happening outside here. So, the first part of our meditation retreat is not trying to watch your breath, not trying to get jhanas or get enlightened. It's actually learning how to calm down this thinking mind by actually being, being in nature. And it's the same when you have your meals, the breakfast and the lunch. Now, somebody pointed this out many years ago, and it was just so obvious to me that, you know, how people don't even taste their food these days. Now, first of all, we have this noble silence, so, you know, you don't need to talk to the people next to you. And don't worry about that, because it's incredible. Those who've been on retreat before, you get really great bonding, friendship with the people after 9 days, sitting next to each other at the table, not saying a word to each other. It's incredible just how much friendship comes up between the two of you, or the six of you, however many on the table. You don't need to speak to create that friendship. But when you are eating silently rather than talking to each other, you're much more aware of the taste of the food. But also, a lot of times people spend the time, if they're not talking to someone while they're eating, they're thinking about something. And you can see this just by the way they eat. So, when you're having your meals, to make the meal an enjoyable experience, but also to support the meditation which comes afterwards, which happened before, always do the one spoon at a time practice. The one spoon at a time practice, you can notice that normal people, when they're eating, they've got one lot of food in their mouth, which they're chewing, and another one is on their spoon, if they're eating out of spoon, or chopsticks, they've got in chopsticks, and there's another morsel of food on the plate, heaped up, waiting in line, and they're already messing around with their food for some other part, the next, the fourth morsel. They're always about three or four mouthfuls ahead of themselves. So the one spoon or one chopstick full at a time means you pick up your food, you put it in your mouth, and you taste the food and enjoy its taste before you swallow it. You don't even think about the next thing you're going to put on your spoon. Your spoon is empty. Your chopsticks have got nothing on it until you've swallowed the piece of food in the mouth. And then you decide what you're going to eat next. But not three or four mouthfuls ahead of yourself. It shows we're never really in the present moment. We're never here. We're always thinking about what we're going to do next. So the one spoon at a time when you're eating also helps you, you know, come into real life. And you're aware of stuff. And you can see here what we're doing here is we're just relaxing our body, coming into this present moment, and just, you don't have to plan anything here. This is a wonderful thing about being on a retreat. You don't have to plan what you're going to eat. You don't have to plan what you're going to get when you're shopping. You don't plan anything here. Everything is totally organized for you. So you've got nothing to worry about at all. You just turn up and there's delicious food there for you. And you don't have to think about a thing. You don't have to plan anything. You don't have to do any business. You really are literally getting away from it all. However, even though the normal stuff you fill your life with, still there's always those opportunities to fill your life up with something, even on a retreat. Such as with your mobile phones, with your iPads, whatever else you've snuck into this retreat. The reception is very bad here, on purpose. So you're going to have a hard time getting any signals. You will not be able to tweet anybody. You will not be able to check the stock market or the football or the cricket, whatever you like. You are stuffed. And I will guarantee the world will not worry that you're not checking your emails. You are not that important. So, so there won't be some great tragedy, you know, if you don't check your emails for 9 days. So you are, isn't it wonderful to be email free? Last year there was a conference over in Silicon Valley of all the top IT firms, and they called their conference, as a brilliant name for their conference, it was called Disconnect to Connect. It's a very beautiful title, because you're so connected to the electronic devices, you're disconnected from yourself, and disconnected from others, and disconnected from life. So it was disconnect from those things in order to connect with yourself, with your meditation, with others, with life. Disconnect first. So please don't waste time just checking those things. And you think, oh, it's really important. You know, my wife is going to be having an operation. My husband is going to be in hospital. I've got to check he's okay. It doesn't matter. It's okay, not okay. It's not going to make no difference to you. You won't be able to find out. You won't be able to go to the funeral anyway until, you know, 9 days' time. So what's the big deal? So it's great. You don't have to worry about a thing. So please, you know, turn off your mobile phones, turn off your tablets. You know, don't go and try and find a hotspot in the place. You won't find one. And don't ask Daniel, because Daniel knows where there are some. So just forget about it. And that means you can have a little bit more being here. And also, don't worry about the time, the days. It's Friday today, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Don't worry about those, because too often we're just, again, prisoners of time. Worrying about what day it is, how many days are gone, how many days are there to go. There was a story of this monk told me a long time ago. His name was Ham Wall. He was a Korean monk in a very fierce meditation monastery somewhere up in the mountains in the countryside of Korea. And he said over there that every year they did a 60-day retreat. 60 days. And it was very tough. There you had to get up really early in the morning. And, you know, you had no escape, because in the evening when the meditation finished, you'd actually sleep in the meditation hall. So, you know, you couldn't sort of escape anywhere. You were stuck there. And the bell went there in the morning. You had to sort of immediately get up and just meditate. If you did go, you had to go to the toilet, and they knew you weren't constipated. You couldn't stay there too long. So, and the other time you could go out was to, you know, for the interview with the teacher. And in those monasteries, they sometimes hit you. So, you know, the people didn't like going to see the teacher anyway. So it was a very fierce retreat. And he was telling me, just in this story I wrote about it in Opening the Door of Your Heart, how tough it was. You know, sitting there hour after hour after hour all day. And as a Westerner, he wasn't used to that. So even after 1 week, you know, his whole body was so sore. And he still had another 7 weeks to go. And every week was just so hard. But you know what people are like, and please don't do this. You think, halfway. What is halfway? Tuesday, Wednesday, I don't know what halfway is, Thursday. Halfway, I've done halfway. So the rest must be easy. You find out, if you have a mind like that, counting the days, counting the hours, you find that the first half goes quickly and the last half is incredibly slow. And in fact, the closer you get to the end, the slower it goes. He was because he was hurting so much, and he was just only just bearing up with the pain. The last week he'd done sort of 7 weeks, only one more week to go. And he said that his thought was, even though he just wanted to run away, he'd done 7 weeks, to run away now is like being unfaithful to all the hard work he'd done so far, all the endurance. And so he pushed through until he got to the last day, and the last day was an eternity, he said. Until the last meditation, only just another 50 minutes to do, because they did 50 minutes of meditation, and then of sitting, then 10 minutes of walking, another 50 minutes of sitting. And that last 50 minutes, he said, it lasted like a whole day. He said he kept opening his eyes to peek at the clock. And he was sure the batteries had run out. It was going so slowly. And he started to think, he told me, what happened if the batteries really did run out? And the clock got stuck. Ah! And even though all those times he peeked, the clock went so slow. But of course, eventually things have to end. And so the teacher, he rang the bell. for the last meditation of the last day of the retreat. And he felt, that people do when they've done something difficult, when they've endured what was almost unendurable, and they pushed through. He was so happy. He'd done something. He'd achieved something. And usually after those retreats, they have a nice feast, hot baths, and relax. And he was really looking forward to the hot bath because his knees just ached. His back was so sore with all that meditation. And then the master said, I have an announcement to make. He said, on the interviews, some of you monks have told me how much progress you've made on this retreat. And how that you've asked me that it's been such a successful retreat, can we please, please, please extend it for another 2 weeks? Having considered your request, it's granted. The retreat will continue for an extra 2 weeks. Carry on meditating. And this poor monk, he was actually from New Zealand, he closed his eyes to start another 2 weeks of torture. And he said he never felt any pain. It was incredible. Because all he was thinking about was what he was going to do to those monks who asked for an extra 2 weeks and the different ways he was going to kill them. And his anger was just so strong. And being really fed up, they can't do this to me. And then the bell rang, and about 20 minutes had gone past within a second. When you're angry like that, just time flies. And the bell went, and the master said, retreat over. The hot baths are down there, you can go and have a nice feast. And he couldn't say, what do you mean? I thought it was going on for another 2 weeks. And they say it's over, what's happening? And one of the other monks just came up to him and said, yeah, the master, the teacher, he does the same joke every year. To teach you not to have any expectations, not to be a prisoner of time. And this is one of the things that we always think it's going to end now, it's going to keep on going. That's where you have a lot of suffering, with expectations. So on this retreat, see if you can just be in this present moment. Don't expect anything. And don't be a prisoner of time. See if you can, for this meditation retreat, be free of time. And don't have to worry about, I'll miss the talk. The talks are all recorded. And many of you have been here so many times. You've heard all the talks so many times. I was saying this to the monks just at tea time. Some people complain to me. And they say, you always teach the same thing. I've heard it before. But everything I talk is recorded. And there's over 1,000 of my talks available on the internet. It's impossible that you could actually have a new talk after 1,000 talks have already been given. And if you look at the Buddha, if you look at the sutras, what he taught, he keeps repeating himself all the time. You go and see the Rolling Stones. They've been repeating the same repertoire for 40 years. So what do you expect me to do? So, if you miss a talk, it doesn't really matter. And don't worry about the time. And if you even miss, actually you won't. It never happens. You may miss a talk. You may sleep through the morning talk. You may sleep through the chanting. But you never sleep through morning breakfast. No one ever does that. You know the time when it's to eat. So you can always, don't worry about that. So try to live in the present moment as much as you can. And then you're learning something about meditation. About being here. Because the story is, I travel around the world a lot. And I've seen many different countries, many different cities, many different retreat centers, and Buddhists and non-Buddhists. I go to many places. It's very rare these days for me to see a human being. All I ever see is humans going or humans doing, but very rarely see a human being. So this retreat, you've got an opportunity to be a human being again. Being here, instead of always going on to the next thing. Always on the move somewhere else. Always trying to meet your goals. Always trying to tick the boxes of things you have to do. What are you doing that for? Have you got goals for this retreat? Coming here thinking, this is what I want to achieve. to get my PB in meditation, my personal best. If you have anything you want to achieve in this meditation retreat, all you'll ever get is suffering, as you've always got. So don't try and achieve anything, try and be here. This is the whole point of the meditation, is actually going in a totally different direction you've ever gone before. Not trying to achieve something, but to let go of all that wanting and the craving and attaining and trying to be something different than you are. But just instead, just to be here. And if you want to know what I mean, there's some of these stories which I've said you can actually take to another level. And it's one of my favorite stories which I've repeated so many times, and I'm going to tell you now that this is the key to meditation, this particular story. If you want to have an incredibly powerful time here, just listen to this story and listen to how you apply it on this retreat. And it's the old Emperor's Three Questions story. It's in Open the Door of Your Heart, I've said it many times. Emperor wanted to find his own religion, decided there's only three questions you need the answers for. And the first question is, when is the most important time? The when question. The second question, who is the most important person? The who question. The third, what question? What's the most important thing to do? And you should all know that answers by now. Now is the most important time. The person in front of you is the most important person in the world. And the most important thing to do is to care. And that was it. So, you know, the when, the most important time is now. In meditation, you know, we've got our eyes closed. The most important person, we don't call it most important person anymore. The most important thing is what you're aware of right now, no matter what that is. If you're sleepy, if you're tired, if you're hurting, it doesn't matter what it is. Whatever you're experiencing in this very moment, right now, give importance to. It's the most important thing in the whole world. That's called being mindful. Giving importance to this moment. Not trying to get rid of it. Not demeaning it. Not thinking it's not important. Because if you think it's not important, you'll wander off into the past or future, into fantasy realm. Whatever you're aware of, literally whatever, is the most important thing in the world. So pay attention to it, whatever it is, without choosing what this is. And lastly, the most important thing to do is to care. If you want to understand what that means, to care, the old story I told yesterday at the at Greylands Mental Hospital, that the doctor who came to me as a young doctor, first year as an intern, wanted to give up his career as a doctor and find something else to do with his life because he lost his first patient, who was a young woman in her mid-20s, and he was supposed to be her doctor, and she died on his watch. And he was the one who had to tell her husband, you know, to tell the news that your wife has died and your little children have got no mother. And that hurt him so much. And I can't sort of relay the pain which he had to feel, that he was responsible. And he stuffed up. Well, he thought he stuffed up, but no one could have done any better. And to tell someone the tragedy, the thing they feared the most had happened. And that hurt him so much, he said, I can't do that anymore. I have to give up. I can't be a doctor, because that's going to happen again. I feel such a failure. And that's when I told him that the job of a doctor is not to cure people. If you think the job is to cure, you're going to fail many times in your life. Many times your patients are going to die on you. Of course you know that. So if you think your job is to cure, you'll fail many times. But that's not your job as a doctor. Your main priority as a doctor is to care for your patients, not to cure them. And if you think the main job is to care for your patients, you never need to fail. You can't always cure them, but you can always care for them. And if somebody who is your patient dies, but they know and the family know they've been cared for, it's a totally different experience. And it's the same with many things in life. You can't cure life. you can care for it. Which is the reason why that third answer to the third question, what's the most important thing to do? Start trying to cure your mind, or cure the defilements in your meditation, to cure your body of its sicknesses, to cure your life of its problems. Start trying to cure things. Care for them instead. And those are the Emperor's three questions and the answers. Now is the most important time. Whatever you're aware of right now is the most important thing in the whole world. And the only thing you need to do is to care for it. Don't try and cure it. Don't try and get rid of it. Don't try and change it. Care for it. And if you can just remember those three instructions, and if you can practice them, you don't need to come to any more talks or question times. That will be enough to get you totally into jhanas, fully enlightened, you know, and everything else you'd ever wanted in life. It's the essence of what we're doing. Now the most important time. The thing right in front of us is the most important. And the thing to do is to care for what you're experiencing. So if you do that, when you're watching your body, you know, sit down, close your eyes, I'm aware of my body. Now's the most important time. It's not what I'm going to do later on or where I came from. And this body, which is usually the first thing you're aware of when you close your eyes, that is the most important thing. Don't go trying to watch your breath or doing a mantra or doing some other type of meditation. Whatever's in front of you, that is your meditation object. Care for your body. So if you need to cough, you cough. Thank you. And if you need to sneeze, you sneeze. If you need to scratch, you scratch. You're caring for your body. And you'll find if you do things like that, the body relaxes. And when it relaxes, then it disappears. It vanishes. And then you can tend to your mind. The mind is there. That's the most important thing. And you care for it. You know, sometimes you may have a thought coming up from the past. If it comes up from the past, don't try and get rid of it. If you try and get rid of all the thoughts of the past and all the worries of the future, you'll find they get stronger. And they keep on bothering you. So if a thought comes up, you're aware of it, and you care for it. You find when you care for these thoughts, it's like caring for the body, everything relaxes, and the past doesn't bother you anymore. Like the body doesn't bother you. If you sit down and you think you have to sit in a perfect posture, and you've read some books or heard from some stupid monk or stupid nun how you're supposed to meditate, and if you put your hands like this, the energy just is connected together and it all goes round. That is a lot, you probably know this word later on, it's called Gomayang. Gomayang is a Pali word. And if there's nothing else you learn from this retreat, learn a bit of like Buddhist culture, Pali language. Go means bull, B-U-L-L, and Mayang is what comes out of the backside of the bull. So, you know, I'll only say this once, it means bullshit. But a monk shouldn't say such words, so I use the Pali version, Gomayang. So there's a lot of Gomayang comes along with Buddhism. And a lot of time you've got to sit this way or sit that way. If you haven't got a straight back, if you're not sitting on the floor, if you're not doing this, you'll never get anywhere in meditation. That is a bunch of Gomayang. So just make your body comfortable. You can feel what's comfortable for your body. So don't just go just believing what others say to you. Feel it. Because your body tells you it's the most important thing and you care for it. And then you find your body relaxes. And then it disappears. It's not a problem anymore. But if you want to sit in a perfect position, what you think is the perfect position, you get all these aches and pains and problems, and you find the body never relaxes, it never disappears. It's a pain throughout the whole meditation. It's the same with the past. If you try and get rid of the past, it will stay with you. It'll be a big problem. So we do things like we soften the past. Yeah, a thought comes up from the past. It's here, it's important. Why it comes up, who knows, but it's here. And we don't try and reject it, we care for it. Okay, you can come up if you want to. And you soften it. By softening it means, you know, you don't blame anybody. You don't get angry or guilty. You know, these things happen in life. Everyone has defilements, why they did this, only they would know. Give them the benefit of the doubt, maybe they were sick, maybe they're going through post-menstrual, whatever it was, PMS, post-menstrual syndrome or whatever. Give them the benefit of the doubt, whatever they're doing. So you don't know why they did that, but just leave it alone. And why you made mistakes and did something wrong, we all make mistakes, we all do something wrong, so just leave it at that, forget about it. And when you soften the past, it's easy to let go of. When you try and get rid of it, it stays with you. Same with anything of the future, any anxieties you have about what's going to happen next. Just soften it, give it kindness. It comes up, some plan of the future, give it kindness. Why it comes up, who knows, but it's there. It's when you try and get rid of it, that's when it gives you the tension. When you try and sort of keep it or whatever, that gives you the stress. So we're taking away all the stress and pressure from our body and from our mind. And you will find just quite naturally when you soften the past, you soften the future, you're not trying to get rid of anything. It vanishes and you're just left with this beautiful just being right here, just being in the present moment. And you can sustain this present moment because it's important to you. You know, sometimes the present moment is boring. Sometimes you don't know what you want to do. But stay with that. Even stay with that feeling. No, I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing. Whatever it is which is happening right now is the most important thing in the whole world. You get a lot of insight from this. All you need is to care for this feeling. And because you're not trying to get rid of things, because you're not wanting anything, your body and mind gets very still. And what happens next, you'll find out, is the key. You see, the great benefits of meditation. Because you're not fighting the world, you're not fighting the past, you're not fighting the future, you're not fighting the present, you're not fighting life. Because you're peaceful, you become still. And everything becomes very enjoyable. Everything becomes bright. You become much more aware and happy and still. And meditation happens. What really happens is the body gets so relaxed and peaceful, it's delightful, it vanishes. Past and future vanishes because it's just nice being here. A lot of times you just become aware of your breathing because that's the only thing left moving. And you just watch this breath, the most important thing in the world to you, right in this moment, caring for it, not trying to control it. And they get so peaceful and still. And as you become more peaceful and still, because you're not wasting energy struggling and striving and thinking and wanting, because you're not wasting energy, all the energy goes into mindfulness instead of doing stuff. You literally become more aware, you start to wake up, you get more energy, and whatever you feel, whatever you even smell, many people recently were saying in their meditation retreats, they have these beautiful smells. Like the jasmine smell, or whatever is your favorite smell, you can smell it almost everywhere. And it's nothing that, you know, there's that smell there in the room. It's not that someone's wearing perfume, or like heavenly beings are visiting you. All it is your awareness is growing. And whatever you're smelling is beautiful. And you find the food tastes even nicer. And you go out and you see the flowers or the stars at night. They're just so incredibly wonderful. They always were wonderful, but because our mindfulness was dull, because we were tired, we just don't really see it. And when you get very slow and peaceful, you find your mindfulness gets so strong. You can see so many more things which were always out there, but you missed. Because you were too busy. And what you see is much more enjoyable. You find through stillness, the mindfulness increases in power. And everything becomes happy and beautiful. Which means you can stay watching very simple things for long periods of time. Your breathing becomes very beautiful. It's a incredible thing to know that you can sit here hour to hour just watching your breath go in, watching your breath go out. As happy as Larry, just enjoying every moment. 2 hours of just good fun. And when you say that to people, what, watching your breath for 2 hours, you don't get bored? Actually, no, you just have great fun. Great joy, because you're becoming still, mindfulness increasing, whatever you look at becomes pleasurable, joyful. Which means you can meditate for much longer than you ever thought possible and having a lot of happiness. And this is understanding that meditation is starting to work. And then that really can take off into deep meditations, very great ecstasy. And that's all you're watching. In those deep meditations, what are you aware of? Just ecstasy. For hours, having a great time. Yeah, it's a nice way of spending a few hours, but also you learn so much more because your mind gets very powered by that. And this is actually where enlightenment stuff comes from. So powerfully mindful. So joyful. You've got so much energy. You can see so much more deeply. So that's actually what happens in the meditation. Not everyone will get those experiences, but some of you will. And you'll surprise yourself just sitting here having the time of your life, enjoying every moment, as long as you follow instructions. But if you try to attain anything, if you're struggling and striving, and now I'm going to do it, this retreat, I've been to these other retreats, I'm going to get something on this retreat. If you're struggling and striving like that, you're getting absolutely nowhere. Because going to a very core teaching of retreats, of meditation, there are two types of meditation. I say this on every one of my retreats. The two types of meditation I call Second Noble Truth Meditation and Third Noble Truth Meditation. And for those of you who don't know the Four Noble Truths, the core teaching of Buddhism, the truth of suffering, the cause of suffering being craving, the end of suffering being the end of craving, and the way to leading to the end of suffering is the Eightfold Path. But the second noble truth, craving causes suffering. So if you're not blissing out, if you're not peaceful, if your meditation's not happy, why? It's because you are doing second noble truth meditation. You are wanting something. So wanting causes suffering. So if you're suffering, you must be wanting something. That's the error in your meditation. You want something. You want to get rid of something. You want to be peaceful. You want to have bliss. You want to be enlightened. Any wanting causes suffering. Core teaching of Buddhism. So don't do Second Noble Truth meditation. If you're suffering, it's because you want something. Nothing else. And Third Noble Truth meditation. Letting go of all wanting, not letting go, not wanting anything. The Buddha said, leads to enlightenment, the end of suffering. So if you have a beautiful meditation, you look back, why did I have that beautiful meditation? Because you didn't want anything. You were so content, so peaceful, didn't want anything in the whole world. That's Third Noble Truth meditation. So in this retreat, we do not recommend Second Noble Truth meditation. We only recommend Third Noble Truth meditation. Letting go of wanting. Being content. Being in this moment. Whatever you're experiencing right now is the most important thing in the world. Care for it, that's all. And that attitude is called Third Noble Truth meditation. Letting go of wanting. And just to emphasize the point before I let you go, Ajahn Chah, my master, he would always get his hand up. He was the same, you know, he always teach the same teachings every time. But, you know, I realized they were really important. They really stuck into me. That's why I can repeat them now. He'd lift up his hand and he'd start waving it. And he said, this represents a leaf on a tree. A leaf on a tree only moves because of the wind. If the wind stopped, the leaf would move less and less and less until it would become perfectly still. You all know that. If you don't believe me, check it outside. It's sort of leaves you can look at. They only move because of the wind. Because the natural state of a leaf, its default state, is to be still. And Ajahn Chah used to say, that is the same with the human mind. The default state, the natural state of the human mind, is to be still. It only moves because of some wind outside of itself, making it shake. Those are the winds of wanting. You want something, even good things, noble things. It makes your mind move. So the whole point of meditation, according to Ajahn Chah, when I'm his student, he was absolutely right, same as the Buddha said, the whole point of meditation is learn how to stop this wanting business and just to be. And if you can protect your mind from wanting something, your mind will move less and less until it becomes perfectly still, all by itself. You don't have to hold it still. You don't have to make it still. Just stop the winds of wanting. It becomes still all by itself. Because that's the natural state of the human mind. It's not something you do. It's something which happens when you stop doing stuff. Your mind becomes still when you stop the winds of wanting. That's all we do in this retreat. Out there in the big world, you have to want things, you have to strive and struggle to get by. I always have to do this, Bianca has to do that, Daniel and Mike have to do this to make sure you're all comfortable. But here on this retreat, you don't have to want anything. You can let go. Be in this moment. And I just see and experience your mind slowly becoming more and more and more still. It does take time. Give it that time. Don't expect to be enlightened in the first day. If you become enlightened tomorrow, you'd have nothing to do for the rest of this week. So slow down, take your time. So just give it that time, be patient, and you'll find the meditation works, as long as you don't get involved. So no wanting. And we have just a few little things. Noble silence, so please don't go talking to each other, especially in your cottages. You may have your best friend there, maybe even your lover, I don't know what you're doing in there, but shh, because other people are trying to sleep. So no talking in the cottages, please, for the sake of others. And also no banging doors. But even burglars, they can go into your house and leave and they don't disturb you at all. And they're not sort of meditators, these are low class beings. If they can open and close the door silently, surely you can. All it needs is just a bit of care and mindfulness to do it quietly. And if you, you know, need, especially those, people always complain about people getting up at 2 o'clock in the morning to make themselves a cup of tea or coffee and banging all of the cutlery and just putting on the, what's it called, the kettle. If you need a cup of tea or coffee in the middle of the night, go to the kitchen or somewhere and get the hot water from there. Or if you need one regularly, see if you can get a sort of a thermos or something so you can boil it up instead of putting the kettle on in the middle of the night. Because sometimes that's very disturbing for people. They're trying to get some sleep. And you know, you want some sleep as well. So try and be really, really quiet, you know, in the huts, in the cottages. And also just, you know, even everywhere, you don't need to speak. Obviously, with noble silence, it's not stupid silence, this is noble silence. So if there is a reason to speak, suppose there's a bushfire. You don't think, and try and mime it, well, people are dying. Just, for goodness sake, just say, fire, let's get out. So, you know, noble silence is not stupid silence. If there's something to be said, say it. But, you know, no conversations. That's the thing. So, you know, you can just say, you know, there's just, you've left the door open or something, or, you know, you've dropped your key or something. That's okay. Say that. We don't have a conversation. You drop your key. Yeah, you know, last time I was here, I dropped my key. You know, the key's always difficult to drop and just start a conversation about it. Just keep it short, and that is still noble silence. And that's a wonderful thing to be able to. There's your gift to everybody else. So you're quiet, so other people don't need to speak. And if there is someone who insists on talking to you, because this is another problem. People say, but somebody talked to me, and I said, be quiet. And then he said, why should I be quiet? And then we had a conversation about quietness. So if somebody is talking to you, and you don't want to talk back, there is something in Australia we call the one finger sign. Not that one, this one. This one, give them the one finger sign with the shh. So they're talking, just go shh. That's all you need to do. And don't think you're offending anybody, because you know you're actually being kind to them. By when you stop speaking, your actual mind starts to calm down and quiet down too. Because you know when you stop this mouth working, sooner or later your mind stops the thinking as well. You become very peaceful and calm. So please look after the noble silence. But noble silence doesn't mean you scowl at people. Sometimes, you know, it's hard work meditating, so when you see somebody and you pass them on the stairs or in your cottage, you can always smile at them. Smiling is wonderful, because people also complain, on these retreats everyone looks so miserable. So please, when you see somebody's friend or even someone you haven't seen before, please smile at them as you pass. And that makes all the difference to them. A little smile is worth much more than 1,000 words. So you can smile to each other and encourage to smile to each other. And that way you can have a wonderful time on this retreat. I think I've covered most of the bases for this evening. It's 9 o'clock now. So you can have an early night. Those who are really keen can actually meditate here. You can go back to your rooms and meditate. Again, meditating in your rooms are great because they're cool. There's your own space. And if you need to go to the toilet, you can get to the toilet really quickly. So you can meditate here, you can meditate in your rooms, meditate anywhere. And that's, we have a wonderful time on this retreat. And of course, I'll be giving another talk every morning from 8 till 9. And also in the evening, we have the questions and answers. You can put all the questions on pieces of paper, and they'll be answered in the evening session. There is some chanting at, what time is it, 6 o'clock? And in the morning time, and I think 10 to 8 in the evening, you can join in the chanting if you wish to. You don't have to, but it's there for people who like doing some chanting and have a nice time here and enjoy the facilities. Okay, is there anything which I've missed out?